10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM, also streaming from KYRS.org. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And of course, happy Pride. And I am here. I am so happy here today because I've got two of my favorite actors around, two really good guys, Sean Gardner and Matt Slater. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing good.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm glad you guys are here. Now, I know you probably just can't wait to tune in the show every 4 o'clock. So you guys know that this is something that I do, that I've been doing. I've been going through On Tyranny, and I just read a little bit from Timothy Snyder's On Tyranny, which one of his quotes is, "If none of us is prepared to die for freedom, then all of us will die under tyranny." Yes. So I'm going to start this off because we have to have appropriate music, and I'm just going to read a paragraph here. Here we go. Number 17, listen for dangerous words. Be alert to the use of words, the words extremism and terrorism. Be alive to the fatal notions of emergency and exception. Be angry about the treacherous use of patriotic vocabulary. All right. Yes, and he goes on to talk about the Nazis kind of spearheaded this to begin with. And something. This book was actually written during Trump's first administration as sort of a warning. And now the guy who wrote this has now since moved to Canada. So anyway, on that happy note, how are you guys doing?
Good. Yeah. We had a great opening weekend. It was very, very fun.
Right. And the opening weekend, I should probably didn't set this up very good. The opening weekend was for Top Dog Underdog, now playing at Stage Left Theater through the 29th, right, of August.
Yep.
And Thursdays through Sundays and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk. Now, you, I've been told that this is sort of a follow-on. Some people could look at it as almost a follow-on to Passover. Matt, you were in Passover. Oh, what do you think about that? Is that
always comes back around?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not. There's maybe not a straight line, but people. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I mean, it's a play spearheaded by the great Malcolm Pellis. So yes. I'd say that kind of.
I think it was Malcolm who told me that.
Yeah, it sounds like something Malcolm might say. Yeah, you know, we work together, so it's kind of a, I don't know, spiritual successor in ways.
Yeah.
Kind of similar story to, you know, main characters. You're kind of just watching live through some struggles and fight through it, try to rise above it, perhaps.
Yeah.
Some characters more so than others.
Okay. And it's just the two of you guys in the play, right?
Yep.
Yep. And what is the story, basically?
What a question.
Well, I mean, you know, you don't have to give anything away. But.
From my perspective, the story is about two brothers who didn't have a very good upbringing. They both each went through their own individual struggles, but find themselves living together and just trying to figure out jobs and relationships and how to deal with all of that while still sharing a space, which is sometimes very difficult for people to do when they're struggling with their own internal issues. So.
Yeah, and you play a character named Lincoln, right, Sean?
Correct.
And Matt, you play a character named Booth, which, you know, students of history might
on this tyranny
might kind of notice that. Is that an intentional thing by the playwright, do you think? Or what's with the names?
I think it's very intentional.
Intentional, yes. Yeah. The names have a lot to do with the story as well, how the story plays out in its entirety. It's very relative to the names that they have, definitely.
It's looking at it, it's a pretty heavy story, but it looks like it's got a lot of funny stuff in it,
too. Yeah, it's definitely a tragic comedy.
Yeah, dark comedy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why people think that it's a, kind of like a related to Passover in a way, I suppose. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have two black characters playing these, you know, brothers, Lincoln and Booth. What I really like about it is just kind of the themes of it. It kind of is talking about history and the way we see history. We live in a very interesting time for history now, right? Where, I mean, we'd have talks about it when we were in process. That's what I really love, is you get into like the nitty gritty of, because I like this. I love this script now. When I first read it, I don't know if I'd say I like loved it right away. I was, because it's heavy and it's two characters and it's very wordy. I mean, it was not easy to memorize. It's just a way of talking, but there's a poetry to it. And so like unpacking it, but we just talk about how, you know, how do we see history, you know, and holding on to history is letting go of some pieces of history. And I always think like now we live in a time where as history is happening, people are telling us what is and is not happening. So it's almost like you don't even get that moment of what's actually taking place. It's like people are trying to influence your interpretation of it in the moment. So I think it's a very apt play in that sense. I think that there's some crossover themes there with Passover too.
Yeah. What you were, you know, you kind of alluded to how you like to kind of, and I think watching you and watching Sean, I get that sense that you do a lot of character work of like thinking about the motivation of your character and what they're coming from, backstories, all that stuff. When you were doing this, you guys, for your character, was there any kind of like discoveries that you made about your character and maybe even about yourself when you start doing this? Because I love that too. I love digging in, like, why would they say this? And, you know, it's all, you know, it's all open to interpretation. But I always walk out of it like feeling I know myself a little bit better too.
Yeah, we find ourselves still discovering things every time we do this play. It's a new experience, and you know, we find new things out about ourselves, about the character every time we do it. So
yeah. I mean, I think it's cool. It kind of turns into this. I think maybe there's a little bit of a like caricature of what a character is going to be when I first like read a script, and then like going through the process and just like feeling it in your body more and more, it becomes closer to you. And it's kind of a weird process because you're like, no, this is. And that's where there's like some stuff I think you discover about yourself where it's like, no, I really relate to this character.
Yeah.
Even in this terrible choice, like I can see that, you know, there's a little bit of me in that too. I think that's one of the joys of acting, is you get to kind of make these wild choices and there's not like the real life consequences that would, you know, stop us from doing it otherwise.
And then you have like a third person interacting with you in the audience too. I mean,
totally. Right.
Times where they may laugh at something that you go, why would they laugh at that?
Yeah.
You know, or just the vibe coming off of the audience really can inform your performance, I would imagine, too.
Yeah. I mean, we had a great moment after opening night where, because the show is funny. It's a dark comedy.
Is this the story?
But it's heavy.
We can get into that.
It's heavy. But yeah, just having the audience there and they're like laughing and we're like, oh, you know, even having to like pause for laugh breaks. It's like, oh yeah, no, this is
really funny.
This is really funny, you know. I think a lot of that, it comes all at once. Like you never experience just one emotion, you know.
And each night probably is a little bit different for you.
Oh yeah.
And how have the audience received this so far?
Great.
Yeah. Pretty great. I had my some like older people that saw the show that they're like, oh, the language. But they got through it and they're like, no, it's great. That's funny.
Yeah, we spice it up with the language a little bit. It's nothing too bad, but
you know, people talk.
We're kids from the street too.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of that, you know, stronger language is just filler words because, you know, we're not very educated guys and, you know, we just kind of talk that street slang, you know, so.
Yeah. Matt, last time I interviewed you probably was for Passover, I think.
Yeah, probably.
And you were sort of, this was like, that was like your first acting gig, if I remember right. You were more of a musician. Do you feel like that? Has that shifted somewhat for you? Or you still, is music still your main thing?
It's definitely not a main thing. I was doing a lot of music, yeah, when I did Passover. And it has, yeah, kind of shifted. I've been doing more plays.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell people I'm an actor now, you know, it's yes. kind of funny. Musicians I used to play with, I'm like, no, no, I'm an actor. You got to come see me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I love it. I really fell in love with it. Passover was great. I got to do some great plays. I just did Macbeth last fall, and that was just fantastic. And so I've kind of just fallen in love with it. And
yeah,
certain shows come up, you know, you fall in love with the script. And you're
well,
like,
I loved
right.
you and Mr. Burns too.
Yeah, Mr. Burns was great too. That was yeah. awesome with Bright Comet. Yeah, that was just a scary. I wanted to try to do a musical show because that seems like the logical next like choice, right? It'll be Let me see if I can do it. And the musical part was hard, but it was a super fun show. Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, I had auditioned for Mr. Burns, and I think my big mistake was because I'm a big Simpsons fan, as I sang the song from was it like 101 Dalmatians or not 100 whatever it was, the one where 101 Greyhounds.
Yeah.
You know, some men hunt for sport, nice. Others hunt for food.
That's
yeah.
good.
Well, thank you. But I think they you know, I went in there with my own agenda, which is sort of what I do when I audition sometimes, which, you know, doesn't pay off lots of times. Yeah. But anyway, but you were awesome. That was such a crazy, kooky play.
Yeah, it was wild. It was
And fun. Sean, I saw you in Company, right? That was the last one?
Actually, Sweat.
Sweat, yeah. Sweat. Okay, yeah. Not Company. Yeah, Company was a different
Yeah, that was just a few months ago. Pretty much went right from that one right into this one, seems like.
Yeah, Sweat was really good. And your character was such a tragic character.
Yeah, yeah. It's another, you know, situation where, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of emotional turmoil and, you know, failing relationships, failing job. it's a very relatable character to this one as well. So,
yeah, that was awesome performance.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, that was one thing with Passover too, that I found when we left, my wife and I saw Passover. It was like, when we walked out of there, we couldn't talk about it for a while. You know what I mean? It was like one of those things that took a while to unpack. And very few shows have done that for me. Usually you walk out like, oh, I like this. I like that. Should have done that. Why did they do this? But that one was like, whoa, I feel like I just got hit in the stomach, you know? Yeah. And I don't know. Do you think, do I need to be wary? Do I need to put a little padding on this one?
Oh yeah. My mom said she thought the show was more tense than Passover.
Okay.
But I think it's because you're dealing with a lot of like family drama, you know? And my mom was a middle school counselor for years and years and years. So she's always dealing with family, drama and trauma. And so I think seeing two brothers work through stuff in the way that we do, that's kind of the comedy of it, is because it's, you know, there's tragedy to family. Come on.
Like, absolutely.
And there's funny parts in there and, you know, the way you relate and the way you work through certain things, but it is also very tragic. And yeah, you're going to, you know, we're brothers. There's a, you know,
yeah,
it can be a little bit rough to watch, but it's real and it is funny. And I think it might, you know, you might have to think about it a little while afterwards, but that's the good theater. Right?
It is good theater. It is. Yeah. In fact, I saw my friend Bridget and her mom leaving at the same time, and she said the same thing. Oh, I just need to think about this for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, and Passover went to state, went to regionals, went national, and now there's still the plans to take it to,
I don't know how to say it.
Monaco?
Monaco, the actual festival. It's like Mondial de Theater or something like that. But yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. That'll just be wild.
When you do these, a play like that where you have done it and you've redone it and done it and done it and then it's done. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, oh, now we're going to go perform it here. And then you perform it there. And then you perform there. And then it rests for a while, right, after Nationals. Oh, now we're going to do it at Gonzaga, you know. And is it hard to, number one, just from a perspective like relearning your lines, are they, are the lines still there and it just takes a little bit of scrubbing to get them back on stuff like that?
That is a great way to describe it. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, you kind of, yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but I'll read the script, we'll run it once, and then it's kind of there again.
Yeah.
Because it's turned into this muscle.
Yeah.
That's what's kind of crazy to me about doing plays is like your brain can like hold these words. I like I remember lines from all of the plays I've done.
Yes.
And they're just in there, you know?
Yeah.
And you can kind of dust them off and then they're back. It's like, wow, the brain is just crazy.
It is. And then when you do it each time, did you find it was a little bit different? I mean, or was it so locked in? I mean, like, you know, usually like your director says, okay, that's it. Lock it in. You know? Did you find that you stayed locked in on that? Or did you kind of, did things kind of drift to different places in the performances?
I mean, one of the biggest changes was just as we went to different competitions, the theaters would get bigger and bigger. And there were different styles of theaters and different lighting stuff. And it was all very specific because of the like time constraints on the competition. So we couldn't go over an hour. But we got to a point where we were running it kind of like right at 50 minutes. And then when you add like audience reaction stuff, we'd never really go much past 56 minutes. So yeah, it was kind of dialed in. It felt very like lively every night. We had all types of, you know, I think it was at regionals. This was in Oregon. Every theater did all their techs and then the soundboard broke. And so everything had been missing.
Oh, no.
And so they had to do this like rush re up the day of the competition. It was crazy. We had Alana there, Alana Shepherd. And so she's great. I mean, there's nobody else you'd rather have.
Oh, no doubt.
As your like emergency contact in a situation like that. But yeah, you know, so you don't know if the lights are going to go the way they should. Passover was nice because there was so, you're just kind of there, you know, and you're not, we never left stage. We just stayed on stage the whole show.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah. So it's kind of like once we were set and cooking, it was, we're off to the races.
Yeah.
You know, working with David. David is very much an actor that we used to talk about, like, depending on how he, you know, was it easy to find parking? Because that's going to affect the character tonight. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So he's very, very affected by what he's going through.
Yeah.
That's what makes him brilliant. That's what he's fun to work with.
Yep.
But yeah, we definitely had it dialed in. I mean, we had a really good team that was traveling with us. And
okay.
Jeremy and Michael and Alana and Joy, everybody that was doing it, Danny, we were all very much a pretty cohesive unit.
Yeah.
I mean, by nationals we weren't. Everybody was just kind of, it was there, you know.
Yeah. What a thing. Yeah. Okay. I got a break from my 20 minute after the hour stuff, but when we come back, Sean, you have a story to regale us with. I've been excited to hear it. Okay. So I'm gonna play a little music while I load stuff up on my other computer here and we'll play that. All right. We'll be right back.
Well, on a brighter note,
commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
Thank you for joining us live on the air.
My pleasure.
One nation under God has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV, its satellite links are United States of unconsciousness. Apathetic, therapeutic, and extremely addictive. The methadone metronome, pumping out 150 channels 24 hours a day. You can flip through all of them, and still there's nothing worth watching. TV is a reason why less than 10% of our nation reads books daily. Why most people think Central America means Kansas. Socialism means un-American, and apartheid is the new headache remedy. Absorbed in this world, it's so hard to find us. It shapes our minds the most. Maybe the mother of our nation should remind us that we're sitting too close to the television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV is a stomping ground for political candidates, where bears in the woods are chased by Grecian foremen and bald eagles.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Support for Out and About comes from Eastern Washington University Running Start, where high school students can earn tuition-free credit before graduating. Applications at ewu.edu/runningstart.
Support for Out and About comes from the nonprofit Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane, a vibrant liberal religious community welcoming persons of all ages, races, ethnicities, and sexual preferences to celebrate shared values and embrace all spiritual perspectives. The church offers two Sunday services as well as children and youth programs. Information available at uuspokane.org and 509-325-6383.
Hey, hey, hi, it's me, Ant-I. You can join me right here on KYRS every Wednesday night from 10 to midnight for the Electric Bender, where you will hear the very best of electro rock, electro hop,
here we go,
and electro pop. Each week we will take a journey through the genres of electronic music. Who's ready for the bender?
KYRS wants your brand new car. Well, not really. Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car. Here's how. Donate it to KYRS. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227.
Honk, honk!
Hey, music lovers and crate diggers. Get ready to spin into summer at the KYRS Lilac City Record Sale. Join us June 21st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Spokane Central Library for a treasure trove of musical magic. We're talking vinyl records, 45s, LPs, CDs, DVDs, concert posters, and vintage t-shirts, all under one roof. Want first dibs on the good stuff? Early admission is just $10 from 11 to noon. Or come browse from noon to 4 for only $2. Looking to sell your own stash? Booths are just $40 and going fast. Email vinyl at kyrs.org to reserve yours. That's the KYRS Lilac City Record Sale, June 21st, 11 to 4 at the Spokane Central Library, 906 West Main Avenue, brought to you by KYRS Thin Air Community Radio and the Spokane Central Library. Come dig the music and find your next favorite record.
Okay, we are back. Oh, that was... I guess it's decided to load up with more music here, so but we'll turn it off. I am your host, Maeve, and I am talking to Matt Slater and Sean Gardner from the Stage Left production of Top Dog Underdog, which has opened last week and then continues on. How do people get tickets to this show, you guys? That's something we should probably... talk about.
You can go to stageleft.com. Let's
Stageleft Theater.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual
it's a theater with an ER.
Yeah.
Dot org, I believe.
Yeah, I believe it's dot org.
Is
I
it? Yeah. So. And then, but that should take you right there, right? And actually, and if you just somebody did Top Dog Spokane or Top Dog Underdog Spokane, that's going to come up too, because I kind of wanted to see what the buzz was about the show, because there's already been some press around it, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Sean, You have a story of which to tell us, and I'm just dying to hear it.
Oh, this one's great. This one.
Okay.
So we opened on Friday, and there's quite a few costume changes in along the ride, and one of the biggest ones happens fairly early in the show, and I have to change two or three times just into various different pieces of clothing and things like that. I forgot to reset my pants at the end of the first scene and had to do the end of Act One in my underwear. It was brilliant. And let's put the cherry on top of that sundae. The next day, I forgot my shirt and had to do the whole thing topless.
The audiences loved it.
I was going to say,
I think that's pretty cool. And it probably, as they say, informed your performance.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I the show must go on, so I just rolled with it.
And, yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of live theater is, you know, most of the time, your audience doesn't really know what's going to come next.
So yeah, they don't
anything
know.
Anything that you do is going to be a surprise anyway.
Or somebody says, you know, last Friday, he kept his shirt on. I don't know what happened.
What went wrong?
I will say this, though. Malcolm was there on Friday when I forgot my pants, and he didn't mind it. He actually gave me the option to continue that doing it that way. I thought about it and declined, you know, but it did make for some good theater.
You know, that's the stuff that dreams are made. I mean, that's like 90% of my dreams. I can't find my other shoe. Yeah, and
I'm so flattered.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. So yeah, that's, well, we'll have to see. So I think that kind of sweetens the pot. Like, what's it going to be like on Thursday's performance? I guess you should buy a ticket and find out if people want to know.
Yeah.
Definitely.
What's Sean going to wear tonight?
Or not wear.
Yeah.
So you started when did you guys start rehearsing this?
Oh, geez. I want to say like May 1st.
Yeah, we had about 40 days.
Okay, yeah.
From start to open.
Yeah, that was right after the thing I was in ended. Actually, we were the first weekend of that. So you guys would have been next up, that's for sure. But anyway, you know, and Spokane is lucky to have you two guys as actors here. Because really, there's not a large pool of black guys who show up to act.
Very true.
Right?
I mean, I agree with that.
and why is that? Is that just the population, or what do we do to have a critical mass of people of color in the theater? I want answers.
There's a question.
I think just awareness. You know, with what I've seen in the last few years being involved with community theater locally, Spokane has a lot to offer. And I think, you know, within the next few years with, you know, great actors like Matt and David and great directors like Malcolm really coming into, you know, bigger scenes like national and worldwide scenes and, we really getting the recognition from this area, I think a lot of actors are going to start coming this way or seeing this as an area that they can actually, hone their craft and get opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a big part of the appeal, even like why I'm acting at all, was the show Passover itself. I mean, I loved the opportunity to be able to do that show and to do it with a black director. It was huge. I think more opportunities like that, like, there are actors out there that will find them irresistible, just like I did.
Yeah,
stories like this, you know, this is another great like black playwright, just like a brilliant script.
Yeah, won the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
I think it won like Tony's for the revival in like 2023 of it, and Broadway revival, and yeah, it's a great story. Yeah, and do you think, like, so, you know, primarily your audience is, I would say, probably primarily white, I mean, right, in this thing? Is that, is, you know, is that...
what I've noticed.
Yeah. And it's, and that's just the demographic makeup, I suppose, of Spokane, and especially, you know, especially, like you said, the older people, which I remember years ago, we go to Interplayers Ensemble, and I'd turn to my wife, and I'd say, 10 years from now, 90% of this audience will be dead.
I mean, yo.
Yeah. Now I'm one of those people. You know? No. So, but it's like, it is kind of an interesting demographic. And although you get the theater nerds, I mean, you know, those of us who would go to theater no matter how old we are, but it's like, I always try to get people, you know, if you'd like to go to movies, you should, theater is so like ramped up. And I was kind of wondering, do you, when Malcolm directs you, do you kind of, because he has such a film background, right? And so do you kind of feel like, because most of, I imagine most of the direction you've received, like I know Susan directed you in Sweat, do you feel like, and those folks are more, all theatrical, do you feel like there's any difference in that as far as somebody who's informed kind of by film when they come about directing?
For me, there was definitely a difference in Malcolm's direction style. He was it was more involved, I guess, and I'm not sure if that's the right way to put it, but there was a lot of really cool actions and, you know, ways other than just the dialogue to get the point of the scene across, okay, which I had never really experienced in a director before, so that was really refreshing.
And I think you saw that in Passover a lot too, the action, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because I don't, he was my first, like, you know, director to really work with like that. But I like his style. It speaks to me. He finds the, like, jokes and stuff. And so that's kind of like where even in Passover would be like, oh, okay, this is how you kind of direct. But yeah, I think he's a, I mean, it's funny. I always make fun of him when he's directing. But I'd say it's like organic. It's like maybe a way to describe it.
There it is.
Okay. He's very much like, let's find this. And we find it kind of together, which is cool. And I understand that now is not how it always goes, you know. But before I was just like, oh yeah, that's just how it works. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, it feels very involved. You feel like you're, you know, you're playing a part in it.
Yeah.
I feel like this, some of the best advice he always gives me is just like, don't act. You know,
I was reading a book on David Lynch, and one of the actors said, "Yeah, she was really inexperienced." She told David Lynch, she goes, "Well, I feel like before I have this big role, I think I need to go to acting school." Mm. And he said, "If you do that, I'll kill you," because he saw, you know, that's the thing, he saw this in this person, and he didn't want to destroy that. So
yeah.
I see that. What, you know, we kind of touched a little bit in the beginning about like the political situation of what we're going through right now. Is there kind of a message you think that people can get from this show to kind of, you know, to sort of, I don't know, maybe not make them feel better, but maybe show them a side of something that's they're not able to see someplace else? This is why I'm not a good interviewer. I ask questions that are really...
That's a good question.
Well, thanks. But I should probably let people know before I spring it on them.
Yeah, what do you politically, think? I'm not sure I've came across anything that stands out you know, prominently as, you know, a political message. Don't gamble away your future, kids.
That's a good political message. That's a good political message, too.
Yeah, I think there's some just in the relationship of the brothers of, because we had a similar upbringing. We grew up together, but we have very different conclusions as to like how to use that experience, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and something I always say, just like, because I teach kids, I work with a lot of kids that are struggling. I do like behavioral intervention teaching. And so I always say, like, use your powers for good. It's like you can have these experiences that are really bad and traumatic and just awful. But you don't have to do that then again to someone else, you know?
Yeah.
You can take that knowledge and use it for good. I think your character does a much better job at that than mine does.
Sure.
But it's like being able to make that choice. There's this great, we were just talking about it, Mr. Rogers, but there's this, when he was like asking for all this funding for public, well, we call it just public, what this is.
TV.
Yeah, public TV and just, you know, getting funding from the government. And he shared this song that he'd written, and it was just about, you always have the power to, you know, do something different, make a right choice. And I think people now, that's why it feels so divided, is everyone feels so set in these ways of doing things with, like, nothing can penetrate who I am. And it's like, no, but you can change. Like, we can all change at any moment. And that option's always available to us. It's not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength, you know?
That you change and adapt and grow. Right. And
yeah.
I always say, like, you know, if you have this attitude that you have now, saying this to a person that's locked in these ways, like, you would have never stopped crawling back when you were a toddler. If you had that back then, you'd say, walking's for losers. Look, I crawl. I crawl really good. That's what I do. Why would you do anything else but crawl? I can get where I need to go. Right. You know, you know, you're a liar if you walk.
Kind of thing, right.
And I think that, you know, there is a point in your life where you do sort of say, I am responsible. And I like what you say. You can be a power for good. And I think, I don't know, I think most of us at some age hopefully get that, you know, as part of our origin story, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Touching on the political, just thinking of something actually related to that. You know, we do touch on, you know, how difficult it is for young black men to actually get ahead, you know, when they actually do kind of turn a corner and want to start, you know, doing good in their life and, you know, maybe get off the street and get a regular job, like, you know, just a regular 9-to-5. And sometimes how just the world, you know, bosses, supervisors, whatever it may be, just puts a bunch of roadblocks in their way. And all they want to do is just kind of better their lives. And then, you know, peers and siblings and family members kind of dragging them back into that world they're trying to get out of. So see a lot of that in you know, the young black communities. So.
Well, and I think that sense of wanting to be a part of a community, like, you know, I think especially like during COVID where there were people were so locked into, you know, it's a conspiracy for us to wear masks, and they would come up with all this stuff, and they found like a community within this. And I think that sometimes you can really get dragged down by your community, but we all need to be a part of a community, and we all have to be. Very few of us, I think, can just walk through this world as, you know, just an individual without any connections. I think it's an uncomfortable place to be. And you guys were brothers, so you played brothers in this, and you turned out very different. How about in your own families? Do you feel like, I mean, do you feel like that really rings true for you as far as how different people are in your family?
I am very much the older brother martyr in my family, with a younger brother about as young as Booth is to Lincoln, about 5 years. And, you know, same type of situation, you know. You grow up together, and you think you're going on the same path, and you just split so drastically. And it's just very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it's funny. We do talk about that. I'm the youngest brother. I have an older sister.
Oh, wow, that worked out really good.
Worked out great.
Yeah.
And I think I very much am a younger brother. Whatever that means. We actually talked about birth order and what that means, how that kind of like plays into the characters and our dynamic. Yeah, but my sister, I love my sister. She's great, but we are very different people. We get along great, but I mean, it's like shocking to me sometimes how like we went through the same experience, and just her takeaway and my takeaway could not be further apart. Yeah, like, you know, and
they're both true.
They're both 100% true. And like, we both are true to that experience. And like, but yeah, it's crazy. It's cool. I mean, it's just, one thing that I am like kind of curious about, I don't know if you've heard about birth order stuff. My family used to be really into it. My mom had this book called the Birth Order Book, and it's like, what does it mean to be firstborn? Like firstborn boy, firstborn girl, like thirdborn, fourthborn or whatever. I'm like, am I who I am because my sister was who she was? And I came after her, and it's like, I don't know, but it does. Yeah. She's very much a type A, like on top of it, firstborn type, you know, I don't know.
And maybe that's because, if, you know, you have examples ahead of you and kind of can see how, oh, I can steer this by doing this. I don't need to worry so much about this because somebody can pick it up for me. And
totally.
And
that's exactly what it is. Yeah. If I think about it, you know, and I've had conversations with my younger brother about this. Like, things were always easier for you because you saw me do them. You had an example. I had nothing. I had to figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I was the oldest in my family, too. So, but, you know, it's weird. I don't know. I think also kids are kind of born. So, I mean, I know there's nature and nurture stuff, but I think a lot of it is how you come out is sort of like, it's a big part of who you're always going to be.
Yep.
Right. You know, the questioner or the problem maker.
The black wolf.
Yeah. I remember my first grade, my dad, I got out of the car. My dad dropped me off at school and he handed me a handkerchief and he said, remember these two things. Always carry a handkerchief, and nobody likes a smart aleck, but he didn't say aleck.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And then I've always carried a handkerchief since then, but that's kept up for the good on the other.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I think he could see that in me, like, oh, this is going to be a problem.
That's
so
funny.
Yeah. And it's always been a problem. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so that's pretty cool. So why don't we let people know one more time how they can go see the show? And the show goes through the 29th, right?
Yep, through the 29th.
On Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
Yep, and Sunday matmatinee too. That's right. StageLeftTheater.org.
Yeah, there you go. StageLeftTheater.org. Yeah, that's all they need to know.
Yeah,
and it'll just walk you through the process. And in fact, I went because we're season pass people and our season ticket people, and it was in the past it was kind of weird because you had to find, it was almost like a looking for hidden treasure to find the link and to redeem that link. And now they've done a much better job. It is laid out right there, you know, searching for it. So those of you folks who are lucky enough to have season tickets, when you go to the website, it's going to be easier for you to redeem your season tickets. I'll tell you that much.
Which is really cool.
Did you guys go to the No King stuff at all this weekend downtown?
Well, we were all at Pride. I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just Pride.
By default,
I was kind of there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Lots of good signs.
It's so crazy how big it's gotten.
I know. And it's funny because the newspaper would be like, thousands of people showed up. It's like, try like 30,000, 40,000 people.
It was crazy. They had booths all through the park. Like, I was like, man, is this Pride or is this Pig Out? Like, what's going on here?
Then when you would say, I need to go over there, but the flow's going the opposite way, you're like, I have to get in this flow, and then I'll figure out a way to break to exit and come back around.
Need a map.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. It was great. And it's such a good time. I had people that, for their first time, this is the first time they ever came down to Pride, and they were like, I'm still jazzed about it. I'm still, you know, just buzzing from the good feelings and people having a good time and people loving each other and getting to be who they are. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Very awesome.
It's great to see all that support.
Absolutely.
And it does feel like it gets bigger every year. That's been my experience.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. It sure does. And then like that No Kings thing afterwards. Mm-hmm. I saw one pickup truck come through on Spokane Falls Boulevard, and you could tell the guy had like some Trumpy kind of stuff on the back. And he was driving on Spokane Falls Boulevard and he looked absolutely terrified. like everything that they've told me is wrong.
Yeah. You're in the wrong neighborhood. But
yeah. Everything they told me about how these are paid actors and there's just a few of these people. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, I am in the minority on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I could just see, and of course I'm reading what I want to in their faces, but it was still like, made me feel really good. Not alone. And that's another thing about theater too. I think when you go watch a show like this is that, you know, you share this experience with other people and you're going through this whole thing together. And that's, have you guys always liked theater? I've always been theater fans.
Yeah. I've actually been in theater since I was 10.
Wow.
I did my first show with Children's Theater.
Wow.
Patrick Treadway. Snow White.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Patrick. Mark Twain. That was his latest gig.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's cool.
Matt, before I did plays, I did like improv for years and years and loved that because you don't have to memorize anything. And I did stand up and stuff, but I always loved theater. Yeah. I just for a long time was like, I can only be funny. I can't, you know, I can't do the dramatic stuff, but I love theater.
Yeah. It is funny though. You two things you said is like, you don't have to memorize your lines. That's the great thing about improv.
Yeah.
And then also being funny. I always find like the funny roles are like the easier roles, you know?
Yeah.
Or even if you're doing Shakespeare, it's sort of a clown show.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, you know, you put on this puppet head and you do your puppet head stuff. And I always feel like I don't like roles that are really close to who I am.
Yeah.
I have a real hard time with that, you know?
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fun, though. You always look forward to the clown parts in the Shakespeare show, right?
Really? Yeah, those are the best.
Yeah.
Those are the best. And so you guys, this is going to run till the 29th. And then I suspect this sounds like this could be another, I don't want to jinx anybody, but it sounds like it could be one that maybe might be entered in competition.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to
do it again.
Yeah. I know. Boy, that could be bad, huh?
Well, it is. I mean, it is a one setting, and I think that's really helpful for the...
and it's small cast.
Small cast, one setting, you know. But
I wouldn't mind it. I will say that it was a very challenging process, especially with how quickly we had to get...
Yeah.
Prepared. This was the biggest role I've ever done in my life, and a lot of words to learn. So,
how do you guys have a favorite way to learn your lines? Because I mean, to me, it's just like it's just drudgery. You're just like for 2 hours, I'm gonna sit here and go
ram it
and over it and over it and over it.
I'll record my little thing. So for this play, I just record all of Sean's lines in my phone. So I've got all the lines and then I'll play that and I'll do my lines at that recording. But I mean, again, it does just end up being drudgery of like me sitting there just hearing my own voice going back and forth. Yeah, itself, you know?
It is. I've had a couple of different like apps that you can record the lines and say them back. And it's fine, except for, you know, you could say everything wrong except for the last word and it's going to move you along. So
that's right.
Yeah. But well, anything else you guys want to do? Well, actually, we've got about 2 more minutes here, and then we got to get going. But you got anything else for people to hear?
No, it's been great. Thank you for having us.
I'm so glad you guys were here, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I am a little wary, though, after Passover. I'm just a little bit scared.
It's good. Passover is funny, too, right? It wasn't just
Passover was funny. Yeah, you know. It was funny, you know, and... yeah, it was funny and it was chilling, you know, in a lot of ways, which is something I feel like Danny Anderson really brings. Yeah. He brings the chilling.
He's a frightening he's a frightening character in that one.
He's a frightening, funny guy. Yeah. You know? So luckily, maybe he's not in this one.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to seeing the show. And again, people can go to stageleftheater.org and get their tickets.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you next time on the next deal.
Absolutely. Sure. We'll be back.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Out and About. I am your host, Captain Maeve, and I'll be back in about 5 minutes to give you station identification. But other than that, you're not going to hear anything from me. Bye now. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
If the baggage of MAGA nuttiness and raw meanness is getting you down, ponder this passage from the classic novel Don Quixote. It is not possible for the bad or the good to last forever, and since the bad has lasted so long, the good is close at hand. Of course, the good only comes when fed-up people openly rebel against the bad. And sure enough, Trump's awful tyranny is revving up a majority movement for the common good. Soaking in self-delusion, tyrants start sipping their own bathwater, thinking it's champagne. So today's Washington MAGA moguls, drunk on narcissism, are imperiously rigging the rules so their clique can grab more wealth and power from the rest of us. Maybe they thought we commoners wouldn't notice or care. But we did and do. So the rebellion is on and gaining steam with nationwide protests and a surge in grassroots populist defiance. Predictably, Trump and company is now resorting to the same losing tactic that panicky despots always fall back on, deploying police and military to subjugate the people. He's commanded the Army and Marines to shut down public protests. Then, posturing as a strong man, this 1960s draft dodger spent $45 million of our tax dollars to stage a made-for-TV, Stalin-style military parade on his birthday, letting him strut around as warrior-in-chief. This is Jim Hightower saying, these are not shows of strength, but pathetic confessions of personal insecurity and presidential weakness. Sad. Don Quixote was right. The good is close at hand. So to all of you in the growing democracy movement, keep pushing. Push harder. Push further. Thanks to you, we're getting there. And we'll get there sooner rather than later. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Hey, this is Ella.
This is Kaya.
And this is Meg, and we're Plum Vision.
And you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Salute, este Dios!
Explosions rocked the live broadcast of Iranian state TV yesterday after Israel bombed station headquarters. Meanwhile, President Trump has left the G7 summit early and returned to Washington, telling Iranians everyone should leave Tehran. Then to Minnesota, where the alleged assassin of former State House Speaker has been arraigned on federal and state charges. We'll speak with Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison.
She was a powerful political leader and a good person because she understood some basic things about life in our society. She understood that everyone is entitled to due process. She understood that kids learn better on a full stomach, so she fought for universal school meals.
Then we speak to Cuba's deputy foreign minister. He just addressed the UN General Assembly yesterday. We'll talk to him about the U.S. travel ban, reported U.S. plans to send more immigrants to Guantanamo, and the U.S. embargo.
The time allotted is not enough to describe the magnitude and scope of the United States' economic war against Cuba. It is not enough to explain the way it hinders our economic policies, the efforts it demands from our authorities to guarantee the country's vitality under such aggressive pressure.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy.